All right, I am ready.
Podcasting, like bounty hunting, is a complicated profession. They said we were coming. They said we were the best in the parsec. They must be suffering from delusions of grandeur. The Journey Into podcast is proud to present this journey into a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. A journey into Star Wars. Join Marshall Latham and Rish Outfield as we explore this world of mystery and adventure featuring many delusions of grandeur.
For a little while, everybody gets delusions of grandeur.
Welcome, one and all, to another episode of the Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur. I am your host, Marshall Latham.
And I am your other host, the bounty hunter, the outfield bounty hunter. No, I'm just Rish Outfield. I guess I have nothing creative to share with you today. Yes, once again, here we are, and boy, we are in the, that's the wrong franchise, but I was going to say the end game now.
Yes, we are.
We're so tight on time to get this out before all anybody can talk about is the last Starfighter. What's it called? The Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker, yes.
That comes out this week.
It does, yes.
I tried to push you for us to get one episode out before where we focus on Mandalorian and where we talk about the second half of that story that I wrote.
Yes.
Just because I don't know how many episodes episode 9 will take up, but it's just this, the Mandalorian is so good that it deserves its time in the spotlight.
I agree. Yeah, it's not letting up at all.
And the fact that they're concurrent, like the 18th is the next episode of Mandalorian, and what, 2 days later, Rise of Skywalker comes out, and then the next week after that, the last episode of Mandalorian, season 1, comes out.
Yeah, that's it.
And we had talked about it last time. They're already shooting season 2 right now.
Yeah.
So there's no question about it. There is a second season coming.
Yeah, that's exciting. It'll be interesting to see how they end this one. It'll probably be a cliffhanger thing, but we'll see.
Well, do you end it on a cliffhanger, or do you end it in a satisfying way saying, if this is our last episode, we want to tie up the major things and let people go their way feeling satisfied? Or do you think that they already had like an assurance from Disney? I guess Disney runs this, or who's in charge of Mandalorian?
Lucasfilm, but then...
But who is ordering new episode? Is that Disney Plus? Or Disney, the giant corporation, or a person that works on the board, or Lucasfilm itself?
I would say Lucasfilm itself. If they said, no, we're not going to do a second season, then they probably wouldn't.
Okay.
But I'm sure they're being pushed because they want content for Disney Plus as well.
Right, and they're privy to details and numbers that we aren't, of just how well this show is doing. But from the attention that it's gotten and the number of tweets and reposts and animated GIFs and people talking about it where I go and the toy sales, this, I feel like this is a gargantuan hit for Disney Plus.
Oh yeah. Like we talked about last time, you know, it's a uniting show. Everybody that was fighting about The Last Jedi, both sides love The Mandalorian, and that's pretty cool.
Well, before we talk about the new episodes, why is that? Why is it uniting instead of divisive?
Well, I think, you know, it is right after Return of the Jedi, so you have all of the original trilogy things that you can use. We'll talk about it. They did use a prequel reference in this latest episode, which I thought was interesting. But they, other than this last episode, I haven't heard any references to the prequels.
Well, we did see that super battle droid in the flashback.
Oh, that's right. We did. We did see that.
And I'm sure we've seen species that were introduced in the prequels.
But it's interesting mix of, I mean, you could look at this and say, boy, every episode is just a huge fan service. But that term is used both positively and negatively.
I only ever hear it as negative, as like a synonym for pandering. But what is the other definition? A nod to the fans, acknowledging that the fans are paying attention?
Yeah, or just, you know, realizing that the creators of this are fans themselves, and they love to put in these elements from the original trilogy and these nods to things that we're all familiar with, things that we grew up with. And so I don't think it's pandering, but it's definitely showing a love for the material, especially from the original trilogy. So I think that it's a pretty neutral territory that they're in right now. They're not, other than Baby Yoda, I guess, you know, there's nothing that's really centered around anything. And that character itself isn't, but knowing that it's the same species as Yoda, whatever that is really the only thing that ties it to any of the movies, other than, you know, we see little references here and there.
Well, do you think that that's one of the reasons why the sequel films are controversial? Is because they're dealing with beloved characters like Luke Skywalker and Leia Organa and Han Solo and R2 and 3PO.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're...
Whereas this, you can just make stuff up whole cloth and nobody is able to say...
Hey, wait a minute.
Cara Dune would not do that.
Right. Yep.
This is disrespectful to... What is Carl Weathers' character's name? Greef Karga.
Oh, Greef Karga, yes.
Yeah. It has been fun to see them like establishing rules, and I guess we knew so little about the Mandalorian. I knew even less about the Mandalorian race, would it be? Or
people?
Tribe? I don't know what you want to call it. But that species or that group of people, I know they showed up on the Clone Wars cartoon, but since I didn't see any of those... Most of this is brand new to me. I have read a couple of like expanded universe stories that included, you know, Boba Fett and his race, but I think all of that has been tossed out the airlock. And so really all the canon is the movies and the cartoons, right?
Yeah, because Rebels, they had the Mandalorian stuff in there as well.
Oh, right, because starts with an S. The one that had the orange...
Sabine.
Sabine Wren was a Mandalorian, and there was an episode where, or more than one episode, where she went back to, whether it was Mandalore, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there were all these like super colorful armored guys that were really cool. They were toyetic, as they say. You know, it's like it's made for an action figure, but I don't think they made any for them. But yeah, I remember there being a red one, and there was another girl one who... had maybe a meaner streak in her than Sabine did.
Yeah, Sabine's mother, I think, was featured in there. That's one thing I'm interested if they'll throw in, you know, with Dave Filoni being involved, Sabine will ever show up in this show, because she'd still be around.
Well, if she does show up, do you have her keep her helmet on so that you don't have to hire somebody that looks like that? That's close enough to pass for the animated character's face.
That's probably the safest, yeah.
Okay, so we were talking about the rules and the, you know, their traditions and stuff. So the first episode we're going to talk about today is Sanctuary. And that was the one that established they don't take their helmets off. If they do take their helmets off, then they're sort of resigning their commission as Mandalorians.
Right. They've lost.
That's like one of the rules. You can take your helmet off, but you are not one of us if you do.
Yeah. Because this is the
way.
What
did you think of that? Oh, sorry. This is the way.
I think it's interesting, you know, to see, because, you know, talking about Sanctuary, you know, the trailers of the Mandalorian, that's the time you thought, oh, this is when he's talking to the lady that's on the planet, and she's going to take his helmet off, and this is the time that that's going to happen. And spoilers, if you haven't seen the episode, she doesn't take his helmet off. He stops her for it. And it's just, I think it just makes him more intriguing. And it's interesting to see how, I don't know if it's just because I want to see it, you know, similar to how I saw emotions coming from Darth Vader. You know, you can see his different looks and kind of what he's thinking based on how he moves his head or holds his shoulders, or I don't know what it is, but I think it adds to the mystique of it.
Well, okay, last episode I asked you, how would you feel if we never see Pedro Pascal's face? If the season ends and he's never removed his helmet, will you be disappointed by that? Will you be impressed by that? Do you remember what you said?
I think I said I'd be impressed by that.
And do you feel the same way? Do you ache to see his face?
No, I'm kind of digging it. How it's just, he's the Mandalorian. He's in the, has the helmet on and the armor. Some people online have speculated that it's not Pedro Pascal in the outfit, that he's just doing the voice. But I don't think that, you know, it shows him as, you know, it bills him as the Mandalorian. I don't think they would do something like that. I think that's something that he would want to do, is try to pull that off.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the advantage of a character we never see the face of, is that they could be stuntmen. I know that Peter Diamond was Darth Vader a few times, and it seems like there was somebody else that was sword fighting as Vader. It wasn't always David Prowse.
Right, right.
And I remember on the Spider-Man set, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, that it was only Tobey Maguire in the wrestling scene when he came out and he interacted with Bruce Campbell. And the time after that, when he's actually fighting Bonesaw McGraw, do you want to say it?
Bonesaw!
Yeah, that was always a stuntman. But, you know, you would never know, because they hired somebody that was the same build and same height as Tobey Maguire. Once their faces are covered, you don't know.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. You know, for stunts and stuff, it makes it really easy to pull that off, I think.
So there is probably somebody, when he has to jump or get knocked against a wall or something like that, that is also in there. But I feel like we would have heard about it by now if it wasn't really him doing the acting.
Yeah, I didn't put much credence to it, but thought it was interesting. Well, hey, I had a couple things to follow up from the last time.
Oh, before we talk about the new episodes?
Before we talk about the new episodes. First of all, do you like the little intro, Star Wars intro thing with the different characters flashing red and blue as it starts with the Lucasfilm logo and that?
I neither like it nor dislike it. I don't know what it is. It seems like a logo that should show up at the beginning of video games. Because, you know, it's just a bunch of helmets, right?
Right.
With a different colored light going on each one.
Yeah.
That's my impression. Yeah, I don't know that it's necessary, but I imagine because there's going to be a lot of programming, they just, you know, they made something, a vanity production company logo to put at the beginning of everything.
Yeah, kind of a Marvelized version of it, I guess, since they kind of started with that, showing the heroes in the Marvel words coming out. It's kind of like that. Yeah, it doesn't really bother me, but some people are like, oh, wow, I'm so excited when they do that. And I'm like, it's fine, but
they're excited. Why?
I guess just, you know, it's the new, we're used to the 20th Century Fox thing. And
that's what it is. It's the equivalent of which to me was just like,
yeah,
a part of Star Wars. Was that, you know, it was almost like that was part of the score.
Yeah, definitely. Because it plays right, it goes right into the da-na-na-na. Yes, they're trying to do something to replace that, I guess. But anyway, I just thought I'd get your take on it, see what you thought about that.
Yeah, like I said, I don't really have an opinion, positive or negative. It's just, I don't need it. But if there are people that get excited about it in the same way that I got excited with, you know, we still get the Lucasfilm logo. If it had replaced the Lucasfilm logo, I think I would complain.
Yeah.
But it's fine. One thing, I don't know if we talked about it, but I love that we see the production art over the end credits of each episode.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it is about that, but it's so fun. And like my nephews who watch the show with me will watch that.
Yeah.
Just to see the art.
No, that's amazing. I think that's really cool to see that concept art played right in at the episode that you just watched. That's pretty cool. The other thing, I think it was after we stopped recording last time, you were telling me about watching the first episode with your nephew, the one with IG-11 in it, and that he liked that so much. And
well, they never say what the droid's name is, and so my nephew just assumed that that toy I have of IG-88 is that guy. And there's not really any reason not to. I don't know that they credit him as IG-11. It's just that there's a toy of him, and so we know that it's a different robot. But he did ask for an IG-11 figure for Christmas.
Oh, really? That's cool.
And Best Buy has the exclusive on that. But like for Black Friday week, they went on sale. So I did scoop one up for him. And the one in Empire Strikes Back did nothing. And I say that, but I think that his head actually swiveled to like look at Vader. So that's more than nothing. But he was a prop. He wasn't even a puppet, you know?
Well, yeah.
And to see an IG droid do stuff, like the way that its hips move and the way that it was able to spin around and fire with like droid precision and open up its chest and interact and have a personality. And it definitely had a personality. I thought he was great and fun. And, you know, well,
you were saying your nephew was laughing every time the...
Every time he decided it was time to self-destruct, he would laugh. And I can't remember if it was you or somebody else that thought that was dumb.
Oh, no.
But I just...
No, I was laughing too.
See, the Mandalorian character is Clint Eastwood in the Leone movies, right?
Yes.
Where he's humorless and driven and just barely human. You know what I mean? You don't see much vulnerability or whatever. And there's almost no room for comedy with the Mandalorian. But he can interact with, you know, a drunk guy. He can interact with, you know, a Mexican guy that chatters, that won't stop talking, or, you know, whatever it is. I'm talking about the
Clint Eastwood,
the Man with No Name trilogy. But it's so similar, the feel of the Mandalorian as being that cowboy character, that gunslinger character. In fact, there was an episode called The Gunslinger.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
And so whenever he surrounds himself with characters where they're able to be funny, I don't know, it's always been a trope in filmmaking, but it works really, really well for me. In the same way as two or three episodes ago, we were talking about Dr. Aphra and how much fun she's having as Vader's sidekick in those issues that I was reading.
Right.
And I just ate that up. I really enjoyed that she was thrilled to be doing this, whereas Vader is all business. And if there is anybody who doesn't have a sense of humor, it's Darth Vader. I remember in Splinter of the Mind's Eye, the book, Alan Dean Foster had Vader laugh. And I was just like, oh my gosh, what would that be like? Because we never hear him laugh.
Yeah.
I was a little bummed that they killed IG-11.
Yeah, me too. I've felt that way about several characters, actually.
Well, who knows how many of these characters are one-offs and how many will come back.
Yeah, again. That's one of the things, you know, like I was talking about Greef Karga. You know, I was surprised that he was only in there for a few episodes, but who knows, you know, by the end of this season or starting in the next one, you know, all these people might start coming together as kind of a group of, who knows what's going to happen with that. Well, I had one other thing, but let's go ahead and get into the episodes that we're probably going to make this longer than needed with the other half of the story there. But yeah, we talked a little bit about the Sanctuary episode. What did you think of the character of Cara Dune?
Well, I had seen Gina Carano before. She did a movie for Steven Soderbergh, and they did a panel at Comic-Con that I went to, and she talked about having, one of the challenges of acting was not actually hurting people, because she's like a fighter, an MMA fighter or something like that in real life. And so she had this scene with Channing Tatum where she was supposed to grab him and like threaten him and rough him up or whatever. And they went through the rehearsal or whatever. And then once the cameras started rolling, she actually grabbed him and broke his nose.
Oh, jeez.
And she was super mortified about that, that she, you know, she didn't mean to do it. And, you know, with somebody who, like Channing Tatum, somebody as pretty as Channing Tatum, I guess that could be a problem. But I was just like, oh, that's an interesting story. That it doesn't make her vulnerable, but it is a funny story. But I watched her in this movie, and like the way that she carries in this episode and the way she carries herself and like the size of her arms and stuff, she is a formidable actress. I guess she's an actress, right? Formidable person.
Yeah.
Somebody who, where I believe that she could take anybody in a fight. And that's neat. But she wasn't just that. She wasn't just a thug. There was a sense of humor to her, and there was a likability to her, and the fact that, you know, she shows up at the end to save the day made it sad that that was her only episode. Who knows? Maybe she'll show up again, and I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
I'm always talking to you about the toys. They have released a Cara Dune action figure in the Star Wars Black series. So,
oh, cool.
I think now we have four characters from that series. We have Mandalorian, IG-11, Offworld Jawa, the Jawas with the red eyes, and then Cara Dune. Oh, you know what? I take it back. There's a fifth one. Best Buy had an exclusive of the Heavy Infantry Mandalorian, the one that Jon Favreau did. With the giant gun. I haven't ever found that yet, but if you can, it's going for a pretty penny right now. The episode Sanctuary, when it aired, I think it was the first one that I heard people say, okay, this one wasn't so good. This one wasn't as good as the other three episodes.
Hmm.
And so when I finally sat down and saw it like a week and a half later, I was impressed by it because it feels like a 1970s show like Kung Fu or Incredible Hulk or something like that.
Or MacGyver.
Where our loner main character comes into a town where people need him, and he helps them save the day, or he trains them, or he, you know, sets the booby traps, whatever it is, and then he has to leave because he doesn't belong there, but he made their lives better. It felt more like a television show to me.
Yeah.
And I responded to that. If I had to write an episode of The Mandalorian, Sanctuary is the closest to what I would have written. That's just the kind of story that I grew up with one of these loner characters who sees where he can be useful, but he doesn't belong with these people. And I liked the idea that he considered settling down with them. I think he was tempted to take off his helmet and be with this woman. And then when he decided he couldn't do that, to leave the child with her, with them, and go off. I thought that was really neat. And circumstances, of course, prevented him from doing that. But I always liked that about television series. You know, it's not sexy to have the main characters get married and settle down. And so a lot of times in television, they would just kill the love interest. But you can't always do that. In some of these episodes, it's just, you know, I would like to stay, but I can't. There is still work for me to do, or I put you in danger by staying here. That made the episode special to me. I think it was probably my favorite of the episodes, even though that's the one that I've heard people criticize the most.
Hmm.
And then also the Scout Walker.
Oh, yeah.
I'm old enough to call it a Scout Walker instead of an AT-ST. And with the red eyes. And it just looked so good, so real. And I loved those as a kid. You know, I never had one, but my best friend had one, and it had a little button on the back. I don't know if you had one.
I didn't, no.
But when you pushed the button, it made the legs appear to move like it was walking.
Oh.
And I've always loved the sound that it makes, and it was stop motion animation, but for a mechanical being like that, it works perfectly. The AT-ATs were stop motion. The probe droid was stop motion. Machines really lend themselves to the stop motion effect.
Yeah, and just the sound of the blaster, you know, it's a different sound that the walkers make. And yeah, no, I thought this was like better even than, well, of course, it's different. It's newer technology, but I mean, they really sold that this was a real thing that they were facing, and you know, they had to do something to get rid of it. And it was very, you know, if it would have just been the aliens or whatever that were coming, I mean, that would have been kind of neat, but it wouldn't have been as cool as this big scout walker coming at them and, oh crap, what are we going to do now kind of thing. And that they found out about it before it showed up, and they kind of had a plan on what they were going to do. That whole scene really worked well with the scout walker. It's pretty exciting to see that. So a question for you, Did you think even for a second that the child had been killed when the gun went off?
No.
Just for a second, I thought, oh, I wonder if they did that. But then I thought, well, they couldn't do that because that would be, I don't think they'd live that down. But the way they pulled off that shot, I thought was really good. It wasn't just right away that you saw that it was Cara Dune that shot the bounty hunter.
Yeah, I did really like the way that they did that. The bounty hunter had a kill shot on Mando, and then his aim changes to kill the baby. And then, yeah, we hear the blaster go off, and it's just that classic, the body falls and you see the shooter behind.
Yeah.
We saw that in today's episode as well. But yeah, that it was all like shot on location. And the stuff with the, like, the blue shrimp, and they made a drink out of it that glowed.
Yeah.
And the raiders were all Barada species from Return of the Jedi. Fan service in the best way, like you said. I mean, not that the shrimp are fan service, but it just, any little hint of the familiar, just, it makes me feel like we're coming home. We're in a place that we haven't been for a long, long time.
But I think the thing that makes it different is that it makes sense. It doesn't feel like, oh, we threw it, like C-3PO and R2-D2 showing up in Rogue One for that one little scene. I mean, that was a little bit gratuitous. I enjoyed it a lot. But yeah, you could consider that maybe a fan service scene for that. But in everything in The Mandalorian, you know, it's made sense. It's fit with what they're doing. It's not just there to make you say, oh yeah, remember that from the original trilogy.
But there, you know, there's probably a fine line that you have to walk on stuff like that. I think we've talked about, like, that Lucas was going to have a 10-year-old Han Solo in Revenge of the Sith.
Mm.
And then he ultimately decided not to do that. You know, that was just one cameo, or, you know, one bit of fan service too much. And he was right, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
To drop that. That there are probably certain things. The fact that it's a species that we know rather than a character that we know is really helpful. Do you know what I mean? In the way that, like, seeing a K2SO type droid would make you go, oh, hey! But it's not K2SO, so it's okay. I don't know, like I hate to skip ahead, but there were three X-Wing pilots at the very, very end of the last episode we watched. And, I mean, it's going to be very difficult for them to be people that we recognize, but they could have had somebody be, you know, one of them could have been Wedge Antilles or something like that, and just use a shot that they hadn't used in Return of the Jedi or something like that, but they didn't do it. And maybe something like that, where it's a character, a beloved character, or not so beloved, but a recognized character, they can only do that once or twice without it hitting us over the head.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of those pilots, did you see who they were?
Well, I recognized Dave Filoni.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he was wearing a cowboy hat over his X-Wing helmet. But the other two I didn't recognize. They are other producers on the show or directors for the show?
Yeah, there are other directors. I had their names, but...
Well, it's Deborah Chow and Rick Famuyiwa.
Yes.
And Rick Famuyiwa was the director of that episode.
Yeah.
Dave Filoni was the director of the episode before, and Deborah Chow is the director of the next episode.
I think she also did the third episode as well.
Right, she did. She did The Sin, and Rick did The Child, so.
Okay. Oh, so speaking of The Child, that's kind of what they've labeled the instead of Baby Yoda.
Yeah, I like to call him The Child.
Yeah.
But, you know, if somebody's not a diehard fan, it's fine if they call him Baby Yoda. I guess it's their fault or George's fault or, you know, it's somebody's fault that we have to call him something. But you were saying, speaking of.
Yeah, so have you seen that market explode like you have some of the other Mandalorian stuff?
Well, yeah. Every kid would like to have a Baby Yoda, but Jon Favreau made the decision that there would be no product because he didn't want to spoil the surprise. And so a bunch of, like, you know, little statues and action figures and plushes and a talking toy have all been announced, but they won't come out until March, April, or May.
Oh, okay.
Probably May the 4th. That was Favreau's decision because he didn't want it spoiled, that surprise. But I have to worry about the crap he must be getting from the stockholders and from Hasbro. That's just like, you know, that's tens of millions of dollars that we would have made Christmas of 2019.
Right.
If you hadn't made that decision. And hopefully he's tough enough to say, well, you know, you'll make it all in spring of 2020. You know, it was important to him that not leak out beforehand.
Right, especially before the first episode.
And I feel like it was probably a mistake financially, but it was brilliant creatively. It was brilliant narratively.
Yeah, yeah. No, I see. I thought there was some things coming out to the market now.
No, there's like nothing.
They just waited for the first episode or whatever, and then they were going to release it.
If they had thought ahead in some way or managed to do it, but it's just so easy for something like that to slip out, and the internet being what it was, everybody would know. There have been t-shirts, because apparently the production time on a t-shirt is like 10 days or something like that. And so
right.
You can buy shirts, but as far as toys and statues and talking plushes, you got to wait until the new year. You can pre-order all that stuff now. Get your kid an empty box like you could in Christmas of 1977 and say, there are going to be toys one day based on Star Wars. Here's a box. And I have pre-ordered them at GameStop. The local GameStop put them up for pre-order. And they're only $9.99 for a Baby Yoda. And he comes with a cup. He comes with a little ball from the end of the joystick. And then he comes with a one-eyed frog. And I was just like, okay, I will buy that, definitely.
Yeah, my wife was saying, she was looking on Pinterest, and she says, there's all kinds of crochet stuff for Baby Yoda and everything else.
Yeah, if you're a creative person in that way, then more power to you. Hopefully, you know, you have made a pretty penny off this stuff, because no official product exists except for the t-shirts. And so it's a market where everybody wants one. If Toys R Us still existed, I'm sure they'd have to like put notes up in the Star Wars section. There are no Baby Yoda toys. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know. But unfortunately, and I think we talked about this last episode where we were talking about the toys, there no stores have Mandalorian figures either. I still have one from the Disney store that I got the day, you know, I went. And you can just basically ask whatever you want for it. I said to my nephew, what do you think, $100? And he said, no, there's some going for $125, $130. Yeah, if that's what your kid asked for, you have to pay through the nose.
Right.
Hasbro was not savvy enough to say, you know, the main character in this TV show, we should ship just hundreds of figures out. There was just one per case, and every store has Rays and Kylo Rens and Stormtroopers and Sith Troopers, but no store has Mandalorians.
Well, should we talk about the Gunslinger episode?
Yeah, remind me of what happens in the Gunslinger, if you don't mind. That's the one with Ming-Na Wen in it, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. So, well, it starts off with a space battle. He's Mandalorian's in his craft. What is it? The Raven Crest? Is that what it's
Razor
called?
Crest.
Razor Crest. And he's being fired on by another starfighter, another bounty hunter out to get him. And so we have our first space battle in there. And I thought that was really well done. Then his ship takes damage and he has to land on whatever planet he can find. And lo and behold, he lands on Tatooine in the Mos Eisley spaceport. Again, that's something you could accuse them of doing fan service. But again, I mean, why not? Why not use Tatooine and Mos Eisley? I just thought it was funny, you know, hardly anybody goes to Tatooine on purpose. You know, they always are in an escape pod, or in his case, you know, his ship was damaged, so he had to land on Tatooine. But of course, you know, all the familiar things are there, and they could have really gone all out and had all kinds of characters from Star Wars or even Phantom Menace or something like that. But they didn't, you know, the character, I think we definitely saw some aliens and stuff that we were used to seeing on Tatooine, but none of the characters that we know showed up. And the characters that we did meet, I thought were pretty neat. You know, there's the lady that he lands in one of the landing bays, and he kind of makes a deal with the lady that runs that to repair his ship. And then, of course, she finds Baby Yoda. Baby Yoda comes strolling out, and so she starts taking care of him as well. Well, he goes off and tries to get a bounty and pay for his ship, basically. So that's kind of the setup of what the episode's about. Another guy, a guy that's at the bar, who's just trying to get into the Bounty Hunters Guild, and he sees this as his shot. You know, he's got a mark to go after, and he wants to team up with the Mandalorian, but he's pretty inexperienced and doesn't know much. And the target that he's been given is a known, or at least known to the Mandalorian, as a killer assassin, and he doesn't really want to do it, but he agrees to get the money. So they go off into the desert to go after this other assassin, who is played by Ming-Na Wen. I really liked her character. That was another character where I thought, man, they could have used her again, or they could have, you know, she could have been a recurring threat or even an ally, depending on the situation, in future episodes. But I don't. That's not going to happen. So that's, again, spoilers, I guess. We should have announced more strongly at the beginning. But if people are listening to this and don't expect us to spoil it, I guess they don't know us very good yet.
Well, sorry, let me jump to the very, very end of the episode, because she does get killed, but then somebody approaches her body at the very end.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
And it made me think, well, is she not dead? Is she going to show up as like a cyborg kind of thing? This has to be a setup for some payoff later on.
It's a clone of Palpatine.
Yes, exactly. He goes, "Rise, Fennec Shand." I had to look that up just to be able to pull off that line. But we don't know who it was, right?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, I had forgotten about that. Yeah, you're right.
And the kid, the bounty hunter that he teams up with, he also gets killed?
Yes. I believe the Mandalorian ends up having to kill him.
Yeah, the idea of, you know, you have to do a job to get into the bounty hunting guild reminded me of when I was in Los Angeles. You want to get into the Screen Actors Guild. You want to be a SAG guy, because union jobs pay considerably more than just regular non-union jobs. But the only way to get into the guild is to work a SAG job. So
yeah,
what you have to do is be pretty or be liked well enough by an assistant director or a casting agent who says, "You're not in the union, but I will pay you. I will give a union spot to you." And there were numerous ways of trying to get in the good graces of casting agents so that you could do this. But mostly it was just luck. You happened to be working a day when somebody didn't show up or somebody ticked off the director and they wanted them replaced and you would make a good fit. I just couldn't help but think of that where it's just like, I want to be in the guild. So if you will help me bring this person in, I'll give you the money, but I just want the credit so that I can be in the guild. I really sympathized with the guy for that.
Yeah, and they had some really great set pieces in that episode. Well, do you call it a set piece if it's... But they had, you know, they had the bikes, the speeder bikes, and then they had the, of course, the dewback that they...
Yeah, oh my gosh, I love dewbacks.
And to see the Mandalorian riding the dewback with his little gun, you know, rifle, that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, if it weren't worth its weight in gold, I would open my Mandalorian figure and put it on a dewback, but I'll just wait until they're everywhere.
Right.
Until Hasbro smartens up to ship entire cases full of Mandalorians to stores. And then it's like, okay, now it's time to open one.
And then, of course, we get to see the Tusken Raiders again.
Right, right.
And that was fun, too. That was...
Oh, and they spoke some kind of sign language.
Yeah. He was communicating with them. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think we also see an EV-99 droid in the bar, too.
Oh, okay.
You know what those are, right? You're a feisty little one, aren't you? But you'll soon learn some respect.
They have the little thin piece that moves up and down when they're talking, right?
Yeah, but it looked like a puppet to me, and I just love that they do that. Yeah, if there are people that are like, enough. Of course they go to Tatooine or whatever. I could agree with them, but I don't care. It speaks to me and I respond to it. Yeah, they haven't pushed over the edge yet. If it had been B. Arthur behind the bar, I would have liked it even more. But I also would have been like, how did they do that?
With the song playing in the background, whatever song that is she sings.
That's right. It's time to go, friend. The show will now end. Sorry to pander on delusions of grandeur. I'm feeling partial to my friend Marshall, but not to Outfield because he's congealed. Okay, that was the best I could do.
Yeah, and you know.
Okay, so yeah, that one was called The Gunslinger.
I guess going back, I mean, they could have had Jabba show up or some other thing, or
not. Leia had long since killed Jabba.
Yeah, well, that's true. So maybe Bib Fortuna.
That would have been really cool.
Could have shown
but,
up,
or you just know, been like in I the said, bar. I'm a fan of Bib Fortuna,
or one of those the Doug or whatever that walks on his hands, whoever that was.
Sebulba.
One of those guys could have walked by, but we never saw them in Mos Eisley, I guess. Anyway, should we move on to...
Sure, yeah. We'll talk about the newest episode for us, The Prisoner. And that one felt like a heist movie. You know, a put the team together kind of thing. It was just fun that he knew these guys. I guess he didn't know the human.
Bill Burr.
Yeah, he didn't know Bill Burr's character. But all the rest of them, or wait, did the Devonarian? Is that what he is? What are the devil guys called?
Yeah, Devonarian. Yeah.
He didn't know the Mandalorian either.
No, he didn't. But the Twi'lek.
Oh yeah.
Did.
Well, let me ask: did you recognize him, or did you have to wait until the credits to know who that was?
I had to look at the end to see who it was. Like, oh, I know this guy. He's really familiar. He sounds familiar. He's acting familiar. But yes, it was Clancy Brown.
Yeah, poor Clancy Brown. He's born to always play bad guy.
But he does it so well.
Yes, it was just neat to see him. And he was a big guy. And this was fun, this episode, with just like all of the characters. They were all colorful characters. The Twi'lek, she had like these vampire teeth.
Yeah,
and
that was weird.
There was something like sort of reptilian about like the way that she moved and... I don't know. She seemed the evilest of all of the characters to me. And then you had that droid that looked like a bug.
Yeah.
Which just, oh, I loved its shiny eyes.
Zero.
Yeah, it was called Zero, and it had a, you know, an English accent, and it was basically a protocol droid with a bug head. And I loved that. The fact that we were on a prison ship, and, you know, you saw glimpses of people inside the cells, I thought was really
neat. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
You see the mouse droids. The droids themselves that were patrolling the ship, that was a design that I didn't recognize. Is that from one of the cartoons?
I didn't recognize them either. Yeah, I don't think we've seen that droid before.
Okay. But it was fun to see them, you know, running around and sneaking and taking out people, you know, from behind, and then the double cross and then a triple cross. And yeah, that episode was highly entertaining. I feel like it was a little more violent than the other episodes were, but then everybody's alive in a cell at the end.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, well, never mind. Maybe it wasn't so violent.
Yeah, I wondered if they put that in just because they worried about, is it getting too dark or whatever? And so they had to show that scene where they're all still alive.
But, well, that's very possible. But it's also just as possible that they said, we would like to, the option of bringing these guys back in a future episode.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be fun.
And, you know, now they want revenge. And that, and it's just the idea of that the Mandalorian makes enemies everywhere he goes. And eventually some of these guys are going to track him down. That is fodder for future episodes right there.
Definitely.
And the droid was just cool. And the way that it looked at the child and then went after him. I thought that the child was going to freeze the droid in carbonite. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Oh, that would have been cool.
And I was waiting for that to happen. And then, the child closes his eyes and raises his hand. And then the Mandalorian kills the droid. I was really disappointed by that. I just didn't know what it was going to do, and he ended up doing nothing. So, I don't know.
I did like that little look that he had, though. You know, he's like, "Oh, what? What happened? Did I do that?"
Oh, the child is so much fun. The little noises that he makes. I paid attention in this episode to see if he made noises, because the toy that comes out in May, it says "Talking Baby Yoda."
Really?
And I thought, talking? He's always silent. But no, there are definitely like noises that he makes from time to time. And so maybe that's what talking means, unless it's a spoiler for something that's coming up.
My son always says, oh, I just expect him to sing like a Mogwai.
Of the three episodes that we're talking about in this episode, sorry, in our episode, which was your favorite?
I think this last one, the prisoner, just because it was something very different than what we've seen before. It wasn't just the gunslinger. It had other characters for him to bounce off of.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of real danger to it, real threat. I mean, there has been in the other ones too, but this one really felt like, he was on the ropes and not being able to make it out. That fight between him and the Devonarian was really well done. It looked like he'd met his match on that one.
Yeah, when he shot him in the face with the fire and Clancy Brown just laughs.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, that's new.
Didn't know that about the Devonarians.
No, because even droids die when he shoots them with fire. It was also the episode that felt the least like a Western.
True, yeah.
All of the rest have had either, you know, a desert or a cowboy kind of aesthetic to him. But that one was in space, in a prison ship, in a starship. And yeah, I just, there was still a Mexican standoff there in the scene with the rebel pilot. But yeah, other than that, I just, yeah, there were no Western aspects to it at all.
Yeah. Like I said, I've liked all of these, but yeah, that one was kind of neat, kind of different.
And then, yeah, we get to see X-Wings at the end.
Yeah.
I love that. I love them. And yeah, I can't help but wonder where the characters that we love are when all of this stuff is happening. It seems highly unlikely that any of them will ever show up, but they're out there and they're alive.
So. Yeah, and who knows, maybe Fennec Shand will show up again. We don't know.
Yeah, I hope so. There has to be a reason they had that person approach her at the end, so
Yeah.
I guess we only have two more episodes in which to find out this year. And yeah, I don't know why they planned the schedule the way that they did.
To butt right up against Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah, just because it gives us so much more work to talk about stuff and that. And yeah, if this show had premiered in August instead of in October, you know, I feel like we would have had a little bit more breathing room, a little bit more space to talk about this. So, you know, I wanted to do an episode where we talk about the whole show and what do you think of the series as a whole. And we'll still try to do that, but that's going to be difficult.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit longer in coming, probably. And in all reality, they probably wanted to do that, but the Disney Plus wasn't ready to release until November.
Yeah, that's a good point. Who knows how much, you know, computer time and making deals in various countries and getting everything ready on this app and that app. And we knew they wanted to do Disney's own streaming service for years. And so, yeah, it's just they're at their mercy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think this has been a huge success for Disney Plus. And it's a shame that there's only 8 episodes in the first season.
Yeah.
I wonder if they'll go all in on the second season and have, you know, double that, or if they're going to keep it, you know, sort of maybe like a British TV. So although if it were a British TV show, there would be 3 episodes each season.
Right. And they'd be 2 hours long.
Yeah, we'll, I don't know when we'll find out about season 2. But yeah, I'm fine with it. I don't want there to be too much Star Wars.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting time, you know, because after Rise of Skywalker, there won't be any movies for at least 3 years, they said, right? 2022?
Yeah, they have teased another movie. And I did read an interview with Kathleen Kennedy just yesterday that shed a little bit more light on future projects. And it made me happy because I, just like, you know, when a show ends that you love and you always wish that there had been one more season or, you know, that kind of thing. I did feel like they didn't have to say this is the end with episode 9.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll see how they end things, how they leave things. And yeah, we'll see it in just hours. Dang it. I really do miss the 3 years in between Star Wars movies. So you can learn the names of like all the minor characters. And, like,
right.
Find out the names of all the pod racers.
Every one of the characters on Cando Bight, you could know that.
Yes. And as it stands, I know 0 characters on Cando Bight's names.
You know, my wife and I watched Last Jedi a couple weeks ago, and the more I see that sequence, the more I'm like, ah, oh, there's so much things being wasted. I mean, there's some good things, but most of it could be thrown away, I think.
Yeah, well, watch the Blu-ray sometime or the original version of that scene, and you find out that it was originally twice as long.
Oh, wow.
So you're just like, yeah, well, like, he did trim it down considerably, but not enough. I don't know. I did read an interview with Rian Johnson where he said that they played with the idea of Lando Calrissian being the codebreaker.
Oh, right.
On Canto Bight, and I wonder how different that would have felt. But
the one that they got or the one that they didn't get?
I think it was the one that they didn't get.
Yeah.
He was just going to include a scene for Lando.
Yeah, that might have been kind of neat. But yeah, I think of you every time I see the little opera singer. When the.
I haven't seen that since the theater. I know what you're talking about, but it's like it's something that I have forgotten.
Oh, well, your reaction to it was memorable, I guess, to me.
Oh, yeah, I hated it. And it just, some of these things are a fine line, and maybe you don't know how they'll be received. And also, like, once ILM has spent all the money of animating something like that, maybe the pressure is on that you just can't cut it. It's just like, you know, this cost, this one shot of the woman, you know, her uvula or whatever, cost, you know, $1.3 million. Are you saying we'll leave that on the cutting room floor now? I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did refer to Canto Bight in the Prisoner episode.
Oh, they did. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, they also referred to Gungans.
Yes, and I laughed, and my nephew had no idea what that joke was. But he said Misa, and I just said, that was really cool.
It was.
That felt like a wink at the audience. It's just like, we hate him too, kids.
Well, and then the thing with something about, you know, was a marksman for the Imperial.
Right.
For the Imperials or whatever. And he's like, well, that's not saying much. He's like, hey, I wasn't a stinking stormtrooper or something like that. That was another good line, I thought. Another wink to the audience. Well, do you have any predictions for Rise of Skywalker?
Oh, geez. No. Did we not make predictions? Oh, we made predictions for the Solo movie and then talked about how we did.
Right.
And we've discussed it quite a bit, whether we expect a redemption arc for Kylo Ren or not.
Yeah.
At this point, I just feel like he's too far gone, that it would be hard for me to buy a redemption arc because he's vacillated a couple of times. They've given him the chance a couple of times and he's pushed it away. He is a stronger character to me if he wholly embraces evil, or if he, you know, the next time they offer him redemption, he doesn't even consider it.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they're going to do. Rey is certainly not going to turn to the dark side. There is zero. 3PO? What are the chances of Rey turning to the dark side in The Rise of Skywalker? Atu says, the chances of Mistress Rey to... Okay. I think he's going to say zero. It takes him a while to get to the number. Wait, but I'm curious what you think. You may have seen more than I have as far as TV spots and trailers and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm still firmly in the camp that I hope that's what happens. I've kind of resigned myself that I won't be too disappointed if they do it in a really good way. Like you've talked about, a sacrifice play or something like that where he might be redeemed. But I would be much, much more satisfied and happy if he doesn't redeem himself or anything like that.
Well, time has passed since Last Jedi. I think somebody somewhere said that like years had passed. And
yeah,
if that's the case and he is now supreme leader Kylo Ren, it could be that, you know, now that he has ultimate power, that power has corrupted him ultimately, and he'll be a much darker and crueler person than when we last saw him. I kind of hope that they lean into that. I don't know. One day we will find out what the original plan was for these three movies, what Colin Trevorrow's ideas were, what J.J. Abrams would have done had Last Jedi not messed up his plans, et cetera, et cetera. And I have no idea if J.J.'s idea still had Snoke in it, and that's why it looks like there's going to be the Emperor in some way, or, you know, that was always the plan, or if the Emperor is even in it. There are people out there that delight in trying to find these spoilers to ruin my day, but we've gotten...
But not us.
No, and I meant to get on Facebook today and say, today is the last day that I will be on Facebook for fear of spoilers, but maybe I won't even do that. I'm going to see it Thursday night.
Okay, I'm probably going to see it Saturday.
There aren't just like screenings every 10 minutes this year like there were the 2 years ago and 2 years before that. But I went to the theater and said, okay, what about 10 o'clock p.m.? What do you have? Nothing. Okay, what's the next showing after that? What's the next showing after that? What's the next? Until finally we got to 11:30 p.m.
Mm.
And there were still good seats. And I said, okay, get me two of those.
So I should turn off my phone on Thursday night?
I will not send you any Snape kills Dumbledore type messages.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out the best night to go see it. And looks like it'll be Saturday night. So
you'll have to wait until Saturday.
Yeah, because my son works on Thursday, and then we have a couple things going on. I could leave work early and go on Friday, and we still might do that. But like you're saying, we need to get our tickets now if we're going to do something like that. So it'll probably be Saturday.
Friday might be easier to get into than Thursday. But then again, I don't know. My nephew's last day of school is Friday. So my guess is every kid is going to be out of school.
Right. Yep.
And yeah, we'll see. I don't know. We will talk after the weekend about when you saw it and when you want to get together and talk about it.
So, yeah, I guess we need to get to the second half of Most Feared in the Galaxy. The last time we left our hero, he was still on Tatooine. He had found the Slave One. He had found the Mandalorian armor. And so now we can find out in this second installment of the Most Feared in the Galaxy and see what happens next. Roll the tape, R2.
G'choa the Nikto stepped out into the corridors again, and the offline droid buzzed to life again.
Puru'un,
it began to ask, but it shut right up when it saw him. It switched over to Basic and said,
Orders.
G'choa didn't answer. He had one item of value in all the universe, and it was the sun hood his little sister Erezna had made for him when he went off to the Renyan trading post, which turned out to be a slave market. She had made it herself, and it kept him from going blind in the harsh Tatooine suns. He was able to retrieve it with no trouble, only running into two people on the stairs to the worker bunks, and those were two Yarkorka crying over something. He did not pry.
Bad news for all.
He put the hood on and headed back to the hangar, not stopping when he heard a crash and glass breaking in the banquet hall. One of the master's Rodian bodyguards stuck its head out of a doorway, saw G'choa coming, and ducked back in again. He waited for him to appear a second time, blaster firing, but no one emerged. He entered the corridor, trying his best to walk unconcernedly as an alarm went off somewhere up ahead.
What are you doing in here?
A voice called out behind him. It was Hatiz again, and a voice very familiar to G'choa.
I said, what the hell are you?
Then it stopped as G'choa turned. Bib Fortuna was in the corridor, a blaster in his hand, a comlink in the other, his evil eyes widening as he recognized who he'd just snapped at. G'choa watched him, struggling to maintain his confidence as he watched the Majordomo's reaction. Fortuna swallowed, his posture changing to one of submissive deference.
Master Fett, how pleased to see you there. I think you had died with mighty Jabba.
Jabba was dead? That couldn't be. Fortuna's basic had always been flawed. G'choa fought the urge to slink or bow in the Twi'lek's presence, and instead stood tall and stalked straight toward him.
You were wrong, Fortuna,
he growled, then added,
or whatever your name is.
Fortuna's bulbous brows rose in the way they always did when Jabba insulted him or his parentage.
Yes? It would take more than a hole in the ground to stop me.
He was trying his best to sound like Boba Fett, who tended to growl when he spoke and used as few words as possible. The Twi'lek lowered the blaster quickly, tried to holster it, and found he had nothing to put it in.
Yes, yes, of course. I knowing better than to believing such lies.
And Fortuna actually sniggered, the way he did when addressing the master.
I'm headed to my ship now,
G'choa started to say, but instead gave Fortuna a nod and walked right past him. He fought the urge to move quickly, and measured his strides as casually as he could manage. Now was the moment when Bib Fortuna would raise the blaster again, shoot G'choa in the back, and proceed to loot his belongings. It was how he'd gotten where he was in Jabba's organization, after all. But it didn't happen. G'choa turned to look back down the corridor. Fortuna stood like a guard, waiting, his hands patiently at his sides. He gave a weaselly little smile at Boba Fett and made that sniggering sound again. G'choa couldn't help himself.
You take care of that rancor yet? I can smell it through my helmet.
Fortuna looked poised to argue, whether it was that it wasn't his job or that he couldn't smell it, but changed his mind.
Of course, good Fett. I will get into this now.
Immediately, he went down the corridor to where the garbage scows were, presumably still waiting to be used. Gichoa continued on to the premier hangar and realized he'd have to remove his helmet to request access to the bay. That was dangerous. Anyone could come down that hall. Anyone could catch him before he had a chance to... The droid servant buzzed to life again as he approached.
"Orders,"
it said in basic, and clicked open the door for him.
"Thanks, little guy,"
Gichoa couldn't help but say.
"Do you pilot?"
The droid cocked its squat head at him.
"Me, sir? I used to space navigate. 6 owners back. It is still in memory."
"Well, come along with me, if you like."
"If I like?"
it said, and froze up for a second or two, as if its systems were overloaded. Then the little droid raised its head high.
"I am at your service, new master,"
it announced, with a contented tone that reminded Gichoa of his sister when she had been the most carefree, the most alive. It rolled into the hangar, pressed the door close switch, and followed Gichoa into the rear of Slave One. It took him a few minutes to realize he had little chance of flying the ship. He'd never had any training, and though it seemed straightforward, the engines were so overpowered they might crash through the roof of the garage in one go. He turned to the service droid, its insect eyes roving around the ship as though on a sightseeing tour.
"Okay, little one. Let's see how good a pilot you are."
The droid beeped in surprise and said,
"I will be an excellent pilot for you, new master."
It then removed its left hand, put it gently aside, and inserted its arm into the navigation panel. The engines hummed, the ship shuddered, and then rose with a high-pitched whine. As the fire spray craft exited Jabba's palace, Gichoa held his breath. There were sentry guns guarding the rear of the palace. His fellow Nikto Vizam often manned one, but nothing fired. The radio didn't crackle to life, demanding to know where he was going. Nothing happened. Slave One rose up past Jabba's botanical gardens, past the shooting range and racetrack, and even beyond the junkyard and chop shop. To the west, thick plumes of black smoke could be seen. The pit of Carcoon lay in that direction. Gichoa averted his eyes.
"Any problems?"
he asked. The droid swiveled its head.
"I apologize if I am rusty. It has been 81 years since I last piloted a ship, and the thrust on this one is complicated."
"Yeah, right," he muttered. "It is."
"Did I pass, though, new master? May I be your navigator?"
"Sure thing," he said,
and grinned underneath the helmet.
"What's your name, little one?"
"I was called Kathulp, or Urine Stain, in Hattese,"
it said.
"But my previous designation was 0KE.
"Pleased to meet you, OKE,"
he said, getting the name wrong, but not being corrected. He snapped off the neck seal and removed the Mandalorian helmet.
"My name is Gichoa."
The droid froze.
"I know you. You are not the bounty hunter. You are a dredge worker."
The Nikto's jaw tightened, unsure of what was about to happen. The ship was entirely under the robot's control. It would be no trouble to turn them right around and back to the palace, and the punishment that was coming to him.
"Do you prefer Gichoa, or shall I keep calling you new master?"
the droid asked. And he laughed involuntarily. They traveled extensively, first heading out to Geneva Prime and to a spaceport in the Dressel system to refuel. No one bothered him. All heads turned when he walked into a room. Meals were offered, services extended, and fearful gazes exchanged. But it was at Onfredia 2 that being the infamous Boba Fett singled him out. As they were leaving the station, a man with his face covered and rollers instead of legs came out of an alcove and raised a GRS snare rifle at the ship. Gechoa was confused, feeling the vibration and impact of the first two blasts, but not knowing where they were coming from.
"New master, the vessel is under attack,"
OKE said from the cockpit, rather calmly under the circumstances.
"Shall I angle the deflector shield?"
"What?"
"New master, the vessel is under..."
"Yes, yes, angle the shield,"
Gechoa shouted back, removing his helmet and turning on the monitor to see who was shooting at them. He didn't know who the man was, but undoubtedly Boba Fett did. Then again, maybe it was a total stranger, hoping to make a name for himself by taking out the famed bounty hunter. Either way, it came to the same thing.
"Countermeasures?"
the droid asked. Gechoa considered his options. He could go out there, try to talk to the man, or, more likely, use his armor's many capabilities to fight the man, probably kill him, and easily. He didn't need to hide or run away anymore. Gechoa could be strong if he chose to be. The man in the hangar fired again, but the shields were engaged, and the bolt bounced harmlessly off. There was a minor explosion from the far wall, but there was no further harm to the ship.
"New master?"
Zero K.E. asked.
"Droid, you needn't ask me for orders. If something needs to be done, do it."
"Yes, master,"
said the droid, doing nothing.
"Orders, master?"
"Can we take off?"
"The ship is not damaged."
"All right, start up the ship."
"Amendment. There is minor structural damage to the rear searchlight and some scoring to the backup scope relay."
"Yes, OKE. Good. Start the engines. We need to get out of this place."
The droid connected with the power block, and Slave One rumbled to life. There came another harmless blast from outside the ship, as their assailant tried to find a weak spot. First the cockpit, then the exhaust grate, then the landing gears.
"Shall I fire back, master?"
asked Zero K.E. Gechoa watched the man on the monitor, desperately, almost pathetically, shooting over and over. He stopped only when his charge cell seemed to have been drained, and he was fumbling in his roller compartment for another. The droid flipped a switch with its available arm, and the ship's offensive batteries whirred to half strength, then full strength.
"Fire to disable, new master, or to kill?"
The stranger was almost finished reloading, getting closer to the ship, despite having no legs. Gechoa pulled his sister's sunhood off the Mandalorian helmet and put it on his head.
"No," the Nikto said. "Don't fire. Let us go now."
"Yes, master,"
said the droid, and the ship lifted effortlessly off the ground and started forward. The man outside the ship fired on its underside twice more, but did no damage. He shook his weapon. Then the rest of him seemed to shake, as if with sobs, as Slave One cleared the hangar and headed for the open sky. Gechoa watched the helpless man recede on the monitor, with no idea who he was or where he'd come from. His motivations could be easily inferred, however. Helpless.
"Don't call me master," Gechoa said. "We are not slaves anymore."
The droid didn't answer right away. It seemed it had something to think about. Maybe they both did. They touched down on Onfreedia 2, or rather, the station that orbited what was left of Onfreedia 2, and repaired the ship. Despite all the laser blasts, everything was as good as new in less than 2 hours.
"Oh, dear,"
Zero K.E. said when assessing the repairs.
"What is it?"
"There is a frayed cable leading to the port stabilizer, new master."
"Don't call me that, please. Gechoa. Can we replace it?"
"We can, but..."
But what? Gechoa was immediately concerned. How long will that take? A calculation.
Between 6 and 11 minutes.
Then what is the problem?
With the inventory on hand, the cable will be the wrong color.
For a moment, Gechoa wondered if the droid was joking. But of course, it wasn't programmed with a sense of humor. Let's go ahead anyway.
You are certain, new master?
Don't call me that. Please.
Yes, new owner,
said the droid. Gechoa went into the nearest facility and requested supplies from the exchange. To his surprise, there was a high, and rather morbid, demand for Wookiee pelts on Onfreedia 2, probably due to the appalling weather conditions down there. He had a case of pelts in the cargo hold, and felt no guilt in practically giving them away. As the exchange droid carried the case away, he was approached by a lovely middle-aged alien woman, one of those that hailed from the planet Sheely.
"Are you him?"
she asked. He said nothing. It wasn't wise, he figured, to talk to people who knew the man he replaced, whether as friends or enemies.
"You are the famous Boba Fett, yes? I almost didn't know you with the hood up."
He steeled himself.
"Do I know you?"
he asked, putting on his best Fett voice, which he'd gotten quite good at the last weeks. She shook her head.
"My name is Tilden Wee, sir. I own this trading post."
He nodded. It was a lot to own, with several employees and amenities.
"I want to hire you," she said. "I recently had..."
I don't come cheap,
he interrupted, imagining that's what the real Fett would say. In his inventory of the stolen ship, he had discovered a lot of acquired wealth, more trophies than he knew what to do with, and evidence that the man previously calling himself Boba Fett might not be all he seemed either. There was evidence that the armor had been worn by at least 2 other men before him, one of them an old Dantooinian, who died in it around the time of the fall of the Old Republic, and one of them no more than a boy. There were so many stories about Boba Fett, so many exploits, both daring and terrifying, and this explained why. There had been wearers of the armor and holders of the name, of which he was merely the most recent. Who knew how long the Boba Fett Gechoa knew had been in that guise before meeting his end on Tatooine?
"I can pay,"
the woman promised, setting 2 credit chips and a shining coin on the counter beside him. Even if the chips were worth 1 credit each, that coin was worth more than he'd been sold for on Kintan years earlier. Before he could ask, she explained. Her daughter's ship had been waylaid by the Imperial governor of this system almost a month before. He had claimed she was smuggling weapons for the Alliance and had confiscated the ship and all its passengers. The official story was that the ship's contraband had been removed and the trading vessel allowed to go its way, but it had never emerged from the hold of the light cruiser that had disabled it.
"For what purpose, ma'am?"
Gechoa asked, his voice low.
"Well, you see, before he was governor of this system, Moff Demlar was just Kerip Demlar, a young man who fancied me. He wanted me to marry him, bring him a handsome lot of half-Togruta sons, go into old age by his side. I broke his heart, you see, multiple times. And this is his way of breaking mine."
"But he hasn't contacted you. To set terms. To gloat. To see if you're aware of what he's done."
"No, no. It's worse than that. You see, my daughter looks a lot like I did all those years ago. He doesn't have to say a word for my heart to break."
Gechoa breathed in through his nose and let it out slowly.
"I see.
Right now, that cruiser is docked at my competitor's station on the other side of the world. but my spies there let me know that Governor Denlap got a private communique to rendezvous with the Imperial fleet in some obscure mid-rim system. They leave tomorrow.
You want your daughter back before then?
It was not a question.
I want my daughter back however it's possible. Her ship, too, if it can be done. I am a rich woman, all things considered. But without my sweet child, I have nothing.
Gechoa got a picture in his head of what Tilden Wee's daughter must look like. But it was Ula, the Twi'lek dancer, he was imagining. No one had bothered to help her. But someone might be able to help this new girl.
I understand, he said.
She paused, studying his helmet.
Do you?
He thought about what she was asking, and exactly how dangerous it was.
How many other ships are with the cruiser?
Only the one. But this is an Imperial light cruiser. How many more ships would you need?
The cruiser would have shields, guns, tractor beams, TIE fighter squadrons. But this one was docked. Its crew might be occupied, relaxing, or not on the ship.
What time tomorrow is it leaving?
Gechoa Fett asked. Epilogue. It had taken days. Days of pain, effort, anger, fear, and determination. But he had emerged. Boba Fett could barely stand as he rose up through the sand that covered him. He had lost consciousness shortly after bursting through the Sarlacc's maw and out into the shimmering morning light. He had stumbled, gasping, aware he would soon pass out, but had managed to unleash a volley of volatile corrosive NNT-41 into the opening of the huge creature. The last thing he'd heard had been its screams as it burned alive, too gargantuan to thrash or slither away. Now Fett crossed the Dune Sea on foot, sheer determination carrying him along when his legs did not want to carry him further. Jabba's palace was a madhouse. Fires had broken out. Parts of the roof were caved in, the prison doors hanging open, and only scavengers and Bomar refugees hiding in its darkened, abandoned corners. There was a terrible stink in the main throne room, and Fett realized it was coming from the dead Rancor monster, whose rotting body still lay where it had fallen the last time he'd been in this hall. He put his helmet back on and crossed through the room, nearly stumbling over a dead Weequay and what looked like a Bith's head. Jabba was dead. It was the only explanation. He made it to the hangar area and had to force open the doors with a tool, nearly washing himself away with the wall of water that poured into the corridor. The hangar bays were flooded. A hilarious irony in an entirely sand-covered desert world. And his ship was gone. Oh, it wasn't his only ship. He hadn't called it the Slave One for nothing, but it would take quite an undertaking to get another one. Though not nearly as impossible a task as escaping from the mighty Sarlacc. He examined the hangar door. Its security system was offline, but he could still access it. He'd get out of here, get a shower, some food, and then find out who had been in here last. Then he'd get his things in order and get his ship back. Whoever had taken it would know why he was the most feared bounty hunter in the galaxy. The end.
Okay, so there you go. There is the end, question mark, of the most feared in the galaxy. I'd like to see how Gechoa wins out in this, getting this hostage back. And see how that works out, but that's a tale for another time, right?
Yeah, it was meant to have a sort of an open-ended ending and be satisfying in that same way that we were talking about earlier in the episode of, if there are no more stories, yeah, that's okay. But if it's well received, yes, maybe there will be more stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did include the epilogue of Boba Fett escaping the Sarlacc. And that, I don't know if that is, and I hate to use this word. Oh, boy, I hate to use it. But I'm going to use it. I'm going to use the C word. So parental discretion is advised. Is Boba Fett escaping the Sarlacc pit canon?
I don't know. I don't think that question's been answered. He hasn't shown up in any of the media that's out there. So who's to say? But I think the general thought is, yes, he's dead. Didn't survive. But I think everybody's wanted him to come back out of the Sarlacc pit.
Well, I remember an interview with Lucas where he said he considered shooting an insert of Fett coming out of the Sarlacc pit with, you know, like he fixed his jetpack or whatever, and he came up, and that would be in the special edition of Return of the Jedi. And ultimately they decided not to. That's probably the same reason they didn't have the 10-year-old Han Solo is, well, Lucas made it sound a little bit like, well, where does it fit? And it doesn't.
Yeah, what would be the purpose at that point in the film?
That's true. Yeah, at that point, you know he doesn't show up again in Return of the Jedi, and there were no plans to make an episode 7, 8, and 9. So I guess it would just be fan service. But for years and years, since 1983, the very first Star Wars comic book that I ever bought came out in, I'm going to say June 83, and it had Boba Fett on the cover, and he crawls out of the Sarlacc pit. It was a Marvel comic.
Oh.
So as long as he's been dead, there has been that idea of him being alive. And I remember, was it Tales of the Bounty Hunters? That book where it said that, you know, it took him a while, but he crawled out and then he roasted the Sarlacc. He killed it with like some kind of detonation once he had gotten out. And so I think I referred to that in this. I'm sure that is no longer canon, but I really liked that book of the Tales of the Bounty Hunters.
Yeah, yeah.
And so why not include a reference to that?
Yeah, no, there's another story that could be told, is the meeting of Gachoa and whoever Boba Fett that went into the Sarlacc pit is. And again, you know, I know you've talked about it on your podcast, and we talked a little bit about it last time, but the thought of Boba Fett not being the same person over time, that the persona of Boba Fett is more important than who is wearing the armor, and the legend of Boba Fett could go on forever as long as somebody's willing to take the armor. And it'd be interesting to see, you know, Gachoa, I feel, would be more of a hero than a bounty hunter. He'd probably still put on the persona of a bounty hunter, but would be more of a hero, similar to, I guess, what we're seeing on The Mandalorian, to tie it all back in. If he was faced with a child that he had to protect, he would probably choose the child.
Yeah, that is something that I never really thought about, because I never had any intention of writing the adventure where he goes and faces the Imperials and tries to get this girl back. But definitely in the years since I wrote it, I have thought a lot more about that character and about, you know, the powerlessness that he had. We talked about it in the, oh my gosh, I never gave you that file.
Oh, yeah, we had extra content.
I cut out like 15 minutes from the last episode. If you would be interested in hearing the excised 15 minutes, I'll send that to Marshall, and it will already be available if people want to hear it over on his Patreon page. But we talked about it of, maybe there's a theme to this story, and the theme is that Gachoa being a slave and a not a very strong person has been helpless most of his life, and suddenly he is given this opportunity to not be helpless anymore, and what does he do with it? And so I did a bit of a rewrite on the story to punch that up a little bit, to make it more of a choice on his part to be a good person, to help those that cannot help themselves, because he knows what it's like to not be able to help yourself. And so if I were to write more stories, he would definitely be a heroic figure and somebody probably who would detest bullies as only the bullied can.
Right.
So that would be fun. And I guess I could write little interludes of what is happening with the real Boba Fett. You know, what happens when he finds out about G'Chowa's exploits on this space station. But that's only if The Mandalorian season one is successful enough that they say, okay, we want a second season. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, I'm not going to sit down and write anything unless I have to. You know what I mean? Unless people say, oh, dude, that was really, really good. Thank you. Please write more. Or, you know, you and I talk about it and I have other ideas. I guess if people want to let me know what they think and where the story could go and what they would like to see, then yeah, I'll definitely consider it. But in a fight between real Boba Fett and G'Chowa Fett, there's no chance that G'Chowa would triumph.
Yeah, one-on-one, probably not.
So I'll
But if he had an ally or something like that, maybe he could pull it off.
Yes, that's a good point. Because he of the life that he will lead as Boba Fett, maybe he will have allies that the real Boba Fett would not have. That's definitely an advantage that he would have. And then maybe he's smart. Not that Boba Fett is dumb, but smart enough to figure out a way to defeat this foe that he cannot beat in a one-on-one fight.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I, you know, I have to say, you know, playing the part of the droid of OKE, I really like how the droid knows who he really is and doesn't care. That was kind of neat that there's one ally on his side, I guess, is the droid.
Right. I didn't develop the droid very much. When you volunteered or you were shanghaied into voicing him, I thought about it for the first time. So I wrote that scene, that new scene, where the two of them are talking. Because initially, the droid just disappeared. We never saw him again.
Right, after they take off or whatever.
Right, after they leave Jabba's palace. But once you had voiced him, and was that fun doing that?
Yeah, it was. It was.
You sent the lines and you had already done like a mechanical effect on them. So I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I just spliced them in there and I thought about it. I thought about, well, he doesn't have much to do. But now that Marshall is voicing this character, I'm going to give him a new scene. But he's definitely a character that we could expand on. Yeah, I haven't thought about it. Sorry.
No, that's that's fine. No. I think that new scene is pretty fun. So,
well, yeah, I like the idea that his programming just keeps overriding. Whatever G'Chowa says, he still calls him master. And he's like, don't call me master. And he's like, sure, master. I don't know if it's funny or not, but if we do a sequel, I will continue to play with that of, you know, programming is hard to overcome. And well, we'll see where he goes, what kind of character he ends up being if we do more.
Yeah, the potential is there. So yeah, no, I thought this was a fun story and I like the character of G'Chowa. Once I learned how to say his name.
Oh, well, yeah, just reading it, I don't know. I guess that's something where I had to decide how it would be pronounced. There were a couple of those characters that have names, and I've never heard them spoken, and so I just had to say them however I felt like they should be. But there's no knowing. I don't know. There's a lot of characters that we'll never know how you actually say it until they show up in something where someone says their name.
Yeah.
I heard somebody say Ponda Baba the other day, and I was like, Baba? to me, it was always Baba, because like Baba Yaga, you know?
Right. Or, you know, maybe we're saying Babu Frick wrong, you know? Who knows?
How else would you say it? Like freak?
I don't know. Freak?
I did a wager with Big Anklevich that I would give him $10 if somebody says Babu Frick in the new movie. I'm so certain we will not hear the name Babu Frick. But hey, I appreciate that you would do all the lines and, you know, give them to me so that I could splice them into the story and, you know, let me run my story on your show.
Well, it's our show, so.
Well, okay, it is our show. That's fun. Like I constantly say, that's the difference between our show and everybody else's show, is that we can write these stories that nobody else would have. Anybody can talk about that episode of The Mandalorian and how cute Baby Yoda is, but we have that particular.
Yeah, now that I'm writing again, maybe I can take a stab at a Star Wars story.
Yeah. I mean, we could even collaborate if you wanted to. I just, there's a million and one possible tales.
Over Christmas break, I am going to record lines for the old Star Wars story that I wrote a long time ago, just to get it out there. So we'll do that at some point.
Oh, cool.
After all of the Rise of Skywalker Mandalorian stuff has been taken care of. And then, yeah, maybe I'll start writing a new story.
Yeah, somebody emailed me the other day and said that they really liked my Leia story. I think it was Gino. And, you know, he didn't hint, but he's just like, you know, if you ever wanted to follow that up, ... kind of thing. Yeah. And I did. I really did want to follow it up. I wanted to write that revelation of Leia finding out that her dad is also doing what she's doing. And just the closeness that you would feel with that person after you've been sneaking around and you don't know who you can count on. And she's probably been sneaking out late at night and making these calls, you know, hoping that her parents don't find out. And it wouldn't have mattered because her parents are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I still love to write that story. Who knows if I'll ever do it, but that anyway, that's it. That's all the time we have today, right?
Yeah, this is a double-sized issue of the Journey into Delusions of Grandeur today. So hopefully it'll let you forgive us, so that if we don't get a Rise of Skywalker out before the end of the year.
It's 3PO. What are the odds of us getting an episode of what Rise of Skywalker episode out in 2019? Oh dear, Artu says the chances are okay. Well, he can't just give me the number. He had to ask Artu. Very, very low. Slim and none, it sounds like the droid is saying. But yeah, join us in 2020 when we will have many more delusions of grandeur to share with you.
Yeah. You know, maybe we can get Renee and Big back on here. They can give us their thoughts on it as well.
Oh, good point. Yeah, we haven't done that since. Did we do that for Solo or just
last year? We never did that for Solo. That's the one we missed, I think. But we can do it for Rise of Skywalker. So.
Okay, well, mark your calendars.
I have spoken.
Considerably. That is
good. I guess I talked over you, but you can edit that out.
Well, that joke has been done into the ground.
Good night, folks.
Hey, have a happy new year.
You can see here the Delusions of Grandeur podcast orbiting the forest moon of Journey Into. Although the Creative Commons license of this podcast is not yet operational, it does have a strong defense mechanism. It is protected by a non-commercial, no-derivative, share-alike energy shield, which prevents it from being altered, repurposed, or sold. Until this shield is down, our cruisers can share the fire with whomever they like, while the fighters attempt to knock out the main reactor. May the Force be with us.
Is there anything else we want to talk about?
Well, we've been going for over an hour. I don't know. Do you want to... still put the second half of Most Feared on the end of this one?
Well, what's the alternative?
Yeah, I guess we'd have to wait forever because we have the movie to talk about and the end of The Mandalorian. So, yeah.
Well, briefly, let's just talk about Most Feared Bounty Hunter, or Most Feared in the Galaxy, I guess. And the show will now end. Delusions of Grandeur. What rhymes with grandeur?
Nothing that I know of.
I'm a
badger.
I'm a something lander.